Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Institute for Personal Development, where total consciousness is the new frontier. Kriya Yoga is the union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices that initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Choi, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Well, good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
I'm a little snow-bitten this morning, but I'm doing well. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing great, too. What a whopper of a snowstorm we had yesterday. But I hope everybody is well and warm and comfortable. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will discuss the 31st week of the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance as a tribute to Paramahansa Yogananda, the person responsible for bringing Kriya Yoga to the United States in 1920. We did attend the movie Awake, The Life of Paramahansa Yogananda last week, and we will review the movie and compare the screenplay to the work that is now being done in Hampton, New Hampshire. We'll also discuss some of the differences between what was brought to the United States and what we Americans at Institute for Personal Development have done with this information. Much in the same way Henry Ford's automobile was enhanced by the Japanese, Kriya Yoga has been enriched with the revolutionary ideas and practices to make Kriya Yoga more experiential than intellectual. So, Swami, let's get started. What did you think about the movie?
Oh, I like the movie. I really like the way that the movie presented Yogananda's life and how it followed his years and the work that he did. It even portrayed some of the struggles that he underwent, you know, that it wasn't just smooth sailing all the way, just get off the boat and hang out your shingle and here we go, that there were some trials and tribulations that he had to undergo. And the other thing I liked about the movie also was the commentary by the guest speakers and stuff kind of gave you some insight into what people have done with that information since he has brought it here.
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie as well. And it was almost comforting to know, you know, like you said, that he did have some struggles and he had some trying times and things like that. And then I associate that with some of the, you know, advice and wisdom that you give us to kind of overcome those obstacles. So what in particular, what guest speaker did you find that was maybe more revealing?
I don't know if I kind of categorized them or you know, praised them as far as what was more revealing. But there was, you know, just stuff that was said in the movie that I find to be really interesting, period. That, I don't know, let's say, for example, there was one speaker in there. I think his last name is Simon. I'm not sure what his first name was, but in the movie, he makes the statement, you know, we need nothing. And, of course, to me, I find that to be a really interesting statement. But I also think that, you know, it's a string of words that can be interpreted, you know, in an infinite number of different ways. And so just exactly, you know, how we internalize that type of message, because that's one of the things I've always found is that you cannot separate your sense of perception from what it is that you're perceiving. So a lot of times everything is more of a projection than it is, you know, a satori or an insight. That all it is, you know, something resonates to something that we already believe or that we already think we understand. Because, you know, for me, we need nothing, you know, can be a very obscure statement. But it can also, you know, be a very profound statement. You know, because to say, well, we need nothing, if you really cross-examine it and you analyzed it, we all have needs. You know, we're all codependent. So to say you need nothing is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of an arrogant statement. Because you're saying something that isn't true, isn't possible. But if you interpreted it, say, for example, the way that, you know, we use the word, that we need nothing, means that, you know, it's more of a statement that this void or this nothing is our primary source of sustenance. And again, it's a, you know, it's just a matter of how we interpret the words. You know, even say, for example, I mean, just the general theme of the movie itself. You know, Paramahansa Yogananda, that, you know, for a lot of people, people have a tendency to worship these people as opposed to, you know, take them for face value and recognize that, you know, they're bringing us some information, and it's our responsibility to assimilate this information and apply it because it's instruction to do something. And instead, we have a tendency to venerate the messenger and not really employ the information. And I think that's one of the things that we really emphasize here. You know, that Paramahansa Yogananda, I mean, he was, you know, another person just like you or I. And we have a tendency to deify and somehow project onto these people, you know, this desire for this supernatural capability, when in fact they're just people. And, you know, we're hoping for them to be something much bigger than what they really are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if the teacher themselves, if they get caught up in that, can be very debilitating. It's one of the things that the texts really caution us against, you know, because you really don't want to draw off your audience. Isn't that what we always say? You know, I mean, in Kriya Yoga, I mean, the whole thing of having this relationship with this indivisible unified state, with this void or this nothing, gives you the benefit of internal support. Then your exchange of energy is different with the outside world. But these were some of the things that we pulled out of the information that Paramahansa Yogananda brought here, which, you know, is why we really are grateful for the work that he did, as opposed to just sitting around and worshiping, you know, the ground that he walked on, kind of a thing.
I mean, I would imagine that being in his shoes and having all these people, as you say, worship him like that, I would imagine that puts a lot of pressure on a teacher, on a Swami, to always try to perform and give out these words of wisdom 24/7.
Well, it's not so much pressure as it is this temptation that after a while you start to get caught up in it. You know, that you get pulled into it, and then all of a sudden you start to almost believe that you have all of these powers, and it becomes a trap. So one of the things that you're constantly trying to do is again, not have people become dependent upon you by constantly turning over the responsibility to them. And to me, that's my understanding of how the teaching actually works the best, as opposed to, you know, you becoming this inflated image that everybody else kind of goes to and projects all of these powers onto. Because that's the temptation. Then you start drawing off of that yourself. And then, of course, you know, you're in the realms of suffering and decay again, as opposed to drawing from this tree of life, you know, where your exchange of energy now is that you're just giving back. You don't take off. you know, whether people like you or they don't like you, you know, whether your teaching is popular or it's not popular, it's really not that important, because you have this clear understanding of what exactly is important to me is intact, and it's not going anywhere. And the other thing is that it becomes your source of joy, mm-hmm. so that you are constantly refreshing your environment.
In the movie, they kept making comments about his eyes, and that, you know, when Paramahansa Yogananda looked at them, they had this, they could feel this kind of a shift. What do you think about that? What was it all about?
Well, again, you know, I mean, it's a trap. It's really not something that you want to try and get caught up in. You know, I mean, there was also in the movie, there was Krishna Das was in there, and remember at the end there when he was telling the story about when he was in India. And he met a saint, and he said that he was looking for his guru. And the saint kind of looked at him like he was crazy and said, "What are you're looking for a guru. The guru is within." And that's always been kind of my understanding of the whole thing, that you want to have this primary relationship, not with another person. You know, and that whole guru-disciple relationship that, and in fact, Paramahansa Yogananda does make a lot of reference to that in Autobiography of a Yogi. And I never really kind of bought into that kind of stuff. Again, I think it can be another trap. And then, of course, you know, just look at how he suffered when his guru, you know, transitioned. That, you know, you have this attachment to this external image yourself. And the whole intention is, in the scriptures, are constantly reminding us that we must renounce the world. And, you know, in order to do that, you have to have this primary relationship with this life force. And it's a mutually exclusive relationship. You know, it's not something that, you know, you turn off and on like a radio, that it's something that you, once you have it, then of course you are constantly indulging yourself in it. But the closer you get to that, the further you get away from the outside world. And you get away from a lot of the, you know, the traps of these charismatic kind of leaders that we have, you know, because that's all, again, it's all part of the problem. It's what in the Yoga Sutras they call avidya, ignorance. But that doesn't mean that you know, once you have this internal connection, that you can't have interpersonal relationships and intimate interpersonal relationships. But the thing is that you don't want to mistake intimate interpersonal relationships for this primary relationship with your divinity. Mm-hmm. And that's to me, that's the only thing I caution people about. But to recognize people for, you know, their uniqueness and whatever it is that they can give you to help you create or develop this other relationship, to me, is to your advantage.
I actually did do some coursework with the Self-Realization Fellowship, and again, I enjoyed like the lessons and the things like that, but then it kind of got to this point where, like you just said, you had to worship, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda as your guru, and you can't attain enlightenment without using his image to move you forward consciously. And I always thought that was kind of odd to do that. And I do believe that people need instruction and maybe need a teacher, but to worship another human, you know, to get me to another level of consciousness, I just didn't buy that.
Yeah, I feel the same way about that. And it's kind of like the Tibetans have this saying that you need the finger to point to the moon, but it is woe unto them who mistaken the finger for the moon, for they shall never understand the bright light of the moon, nor what a finger is. And again, you know, these are some of the big barriers and obstacles to this experience of enlightenment.
Well, I think that's a good place to pause for a moment to hear a word from our sponsors. So, listeners, we will be back in a few moments.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudashyate.
If you are looking for a samadhi-based experience, IPD Kriya Yoga has the goods. A complete yoga program that includes the practices and the process. Starting with the separation from mother, including the labors and tasks of the hero and the return as a whole person. Practice makes perfect only when practice is whole. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. Samadhi, or total consciousness, is experienced by knowing and doing with devotion. Call or click now and get started. 603-929-0303 or www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste.
Purna Maria, Purnameva Vashishate.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, Swami, in the beginning of the program, I said that we were going to talk about how we've revolutionized Kriya Yoga. So could you take a moment and inform our listeners, you know, how have you enhanced the Kriya Yoga that Paramahansa Yogananda brought to the United States?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that we've done is we've incorporated an asana program that we call Kriya Yoga Asana. That actually came about more by accident, I think, than anything, but that came actually from my teacher's book, Spiritual Science of Kriya Yoga by Goswami Kriyananda, who actually, for some reason, wrote this in his book. But at the Temple of Kriya Yoga, they don't really do Kriya Yoga Asana either. But the jewel that was in the book was salutation to the moon and salutation to the sun, which we actually accidentally kind of started doing, and then all of a sudden realized that these postures have intention, you know, that there's some deeper meaning to these movements than just physical exercises. And of course, you know, as a result of doing it for all of these years and starting to actually start to understand what it is that you're doing was magical. And then the other part is the whole concept of asana, meaning posture. Our asana program, we really kind of integrated the work of BKS Iyengar. You know, because again, asana is just such a broad topic today, and, you know, there are so many different approaches to it, but BKS Iyengar, his whole approach to asana was that it meant posture, and his approach was that it was a system of exercises that you actually work with the geometry of your body. You lengthen and strengthen muscles and move bones into a position of internal support. That's a huge theme for Kriya Yoga that we teach, internal support. See, the concept physically of getting your bones to support you internally is really important. But then what we really kind of went beyond even BKS Iyengar is the whole thing of the psychological and spiritual benefit, you know, of training your mind to look for this invisible, intangible source of sustenance, and then preparing your body for the invocation of this life force into it, so that now they're not just physical exercises, but you're actually performing exercises that with repetition, you start to absorb them on a cellular level. So you start to change the reward circuits in your brain. You start to change your neurological pathways so that now you are addicted to what you really do need. And of course, to me, that's the yoga part, the whole concept of brahmacharya, carrier of Brahman. So those are some of the things I think that you know we brought to Kriya Yoga. And then, of course, the other thing I think that's really amazing is the labyrinth that we use, you know, as we start to move into stage 6 of Kriya Yoga, Dharana, concentration, that we actually use the labyrinth kind of as a tool, you know, that comes out of the two-part Greek philosophy, know thyself, nothing in excess. That we use the chakra system for part A of knowing ourselves. But then the labyrinth is an organized way of distributing energy in proportion to understanding ourselves in the way that we're created, so that we can dispatch energy into all of the different facets of our minds and actually start to shape our reality.
I think one of the other things that you teach that maybe not other yoga teachers really get involved with, and that is purification. Can you tell listeners about how you came across that and why that is important to your yoga practice?
Oh, absolutely. Purification. You know, again, it's your first niyama, purification. And again, I came over it by accident because I was reading Kriyananda's book, Spiritual Science of Kriya Yoga. And when I came to niyama and it was purification, and I'm thinking, purification, I need to experiment with this. Because at that time, I mean, I had given up sugar, I don't know how long ago. But I ate all what I called the health junk food. You know, I ate honey, I ate maple syrup, I ate agave nectar, I ate stevia, I ate all of that. All of those, what I call, again, health junk foods, that they're seemingly healthier than sugar, but they're still sugar, and they still produce a craving for themselves. And when I opened up the ashram back in 1994, I had started rereading Kriyananda's book and thought, I really want to experiment with this. And so when I finally did give up all simple carbs and kind of conform to the yoga prescription of diet, you know, that what we teach, your primary source of nourishment under the yoga umbrella is foods that get their nourishment from the sun. So fruits, vegetables, grains, seeds, nuts, and legumes are considered primary. And so I actually became a vegan that didn't use, you know, any kind of refined sugars. And, of course, you know, we caution against caffeine, nicotine, alcohol, other substances that produce cravings and disturbances to the mind-body complex. But when I gave up all of those things, it took about a month for your body to acclimate to real food, and after a while, real food is just as satisfying as Twinkies and McDonald's and anything else, because it's all patterning. You know, it's whatever your body expects. If it gets it, it's happy. And it was after 9 months that I actually took what I call, I took a breath, because I begin every day with a pranayama exercise, and the only way I know how to explain it is I took a breath and it went in, and that was when I was like, oh my God, you know, this is what they're talking about. Put God first, use what you need as the symbol to validate yourself. And it was from that moment, of course, that I really started to encourage people to purify themselves, because that's the physics of spirituality that we always talk about. Like attracts like. You know, that you and two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. So if you are longing for a chocolate chip cookie, you know, then of course you will not have attention for something that's invisible and intangible. But once you purify your body and you purge it of those unnecessary dependencies, then the hard work is internalizing this invisible, intangible source of sustenance as a new symbol for validation. But without purification, it's not possible.
I know we only have a few moments left, but before the program, we were talking about a movie that we had seen called Strictly Ballroom, and we were talking about creativity and conformity. Can you inform our listeners about your thoughts about those?
Yeah, that was a really interesting movie, Strictly Ballroom, and the script and everything I thought was really good. And again, you know, it's kind of like, it's not the only movie that's ever come out that had that kind of a theme to it. But the whole thing of, you know, not being limited by just structure and form, you know, not just being dogmatic about a practice. And that's one of the things that I think is so important with, again, what we've done with Kriya Yoga. You know, that we didn't just follow Paramahansa Yogananda to the letter. You know, we understood that there are certain fundamentals to yoga, but then there's also room for creativity and imagination and your uniqueness that you want to be able to incorporate. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept of again, the integration between matter and mind, feeling and thought, mm-hmm. is again, that's everything that we teach. That's why we do salutation to the moon and salutation to the sun. That you know, that if you just follow something intellectually, dogmatically, you don't have the passion. You know, it can be kind of sterile, and it can be, I'm trying to think, you know, that if you are just, it's cold, it's calculating, it's void of passion. But then the other side of that is passion without structure and form. Mm. You know, passion without intelligence can be perilous. Mm. You know, because that's the loose cannon. That's emotionality without the benefit of values that are in accordance with universal order. Mm. So the balance of the two, the integration of matter and mind, that to me is what Kriya Yoga is all about. And so a big part of that is this connection to your creativity, your imagination, and also to employ the strategies that gives you the psychological organs so that you have the ability to make conscious choices, so that you have the ability to employ your psychological organs, your mental functions, perception, reason, memory, intuition. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, that's what produces this genius.
Wow, I think that's a great way to put an end to our program today. So in closing, I would invite your listeners out there to, you know, please visit our website. You can follow us on Pinterest and Twitter and Facebook. Also available are the online classes that you can access through our website, www.ipdtransform.com. Just follow the links to access to Powwow. And from there, you can select your classes. But at any rate, keep those comments and questions and curiosities coming, because we do enjoy hearing from you. Also, be sure to tune in next week. We will be discussing the full moon in Leo. That will be on February 3rd. So, Swami, any final thoughts or comments?
Well, I would like to invite everybody to join our spiritual advance. And this week we'll be focusing on, in fact, the next 2 weeks we'll be focusing on our unique talent. Again, the whole concept of being an individual. And with that, I would wish everybody a good day and namaste. And I'll give it back to you.
Well, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.